Hello and welcome to The Lens with me, Sarah Travers. The Lens is a business in the community podcast in partnership with One Young World. So let's meet our guests today. I'm delighted to introduce to you Claire Kemsley, Managing Director of Marketing in the UK and Ireland at Hays, and Lisa De Watcher, Global Brand Account Lead Food Tech at Google in the Netherlands, based in Amsterdam. So what are we talking about? Well, we'll be discussing how people in underrepresented groups can fare well in the workplace. And we specifically dive into the issue of age. So, what's the reality for workers over the age of 50? We'll also be investigating the business case for attracting, retaining, and retraining individuals who may feel they have additional barriers in the workplace. To find out, let's get into the conversation. Claire, Lisa, you're very welcome to The Lens. So as we always do, let's find out a little bit about both of you, first of all. So Claire, we'll start with you today, if that's okay.
I actually fall into the category of old worker. In fact, I think I'm coming out the other side. I was 60 last year. So I joined Hays when I was 20. So I've been here 39 years. Unbelievable. Huge transformation in the business when I've been here. And obviously DE&I is a lens that we've always looked at our business through, and it's becoming more of a conversation, thankfully. And I think being an older female in the workplace, not that I feel like an older female, it's interesting to look at how things have changed since I joined the workforce 20 years ago. I do think who you work with and where you work and the culture and the ability to really encapsulate every single person, regardless of background and gender in the organisation, keeps it alive. And I think there's so much research that we've not done, but I'm sure other people have, on, you know, creating that culture. And it's a culture of diversity that I think is critical to any successful business. But I do think this conversation, Sarah, around the older worker, if that's what we're going to term it, is really important. We're an aging population from a world perspective. You know, things are changing, health, well-being, technology, all of these tools, all of these assets and facets of our lives mean that we're going to be around longer, that we're going to be able to contribute, which I think is what most people always want to do, don't they? Whatever it looks like, at work, at school, at the university, with a charity, with a network. I think it's about feeling valued for the contribution you make. And I think that's the most important thing as we age as a population and within a business, that we still truly feel valued.
For those listeners who don't know what Hays does, can you give us the elevator pitch?
We're a very large global recruitment business. We have many different offerings. I've always worked in the recruitment piece. So working with organisations to improve and enhance their tomorrow is what we do. So I have always worked with specialisms within the business. As I say, across the world, we've got about 21. I started in finance in Slough and Hounslow for many, many years, recruiting finance. And then I did some startups for Hays Retail, Hays PA Secretarial. In the last 9 years, I've been involved in our marketing specialism. It was an investment emerging business. And I must admit, I'm fascinated by marketing, mainly by the data and the research that you can get and that can then hopefully improve your customer journey and the customer experience. So we are global, we're worldwide. We do a huge amount of interesting work on supporting businesses, not just with recruiting people, but helping them in the shift and shape of their teams, whether that's finance, whether it's skilled labour, whether we're working with construction and property, IT, tech, retail, across the spectrum. When I started, as I say, we were just in the UK, and then we opened Australia, and then it exploded really across America and Asia. And so we're truly international, truly diverse, and I think that's a very important thing for us, the DE&I policy.
Well, we can hear how passionate Claire is about the age theme in our podcast in the workplace. Let's bring Lisa into the conversation now. And I'm sure Google doesn't need much of an introduction.
At Google, we typically look at the competences that are needed for the job. And this is not based on age or on experience, but rather the competences that are needed for a particular role. And if you have all those competences, you can interview. And if you ace your interview, you're hired.
So tell us a little bit about you and your background and how you ended up at Google.
Yeah, sure. My name is Lisa, originally from Belgium, living in the Netherlands for the past 4 years with my partner. And I'm very passionate about digital marketing and brand building. I've been working at Google for 8 years now, currently as global account lead. And that means that I'm spearheading global brand partnerships in the food tech sector. I play a role in advancing the digital transformation of the food tech sector through Google Media and Google Tech Solutions. And next to my role at Google, I'm leading the I Am Remarkable initiative, also in the Netherlands. And this initiative empowers women and underrepresented groups to speak openly about their accomplishments.
Well, I just love the I Am Remarkable movement. I've been a fan for some time now. There's a particular video that's available online, which I just love asking women to actually write down on a piece of paper why they're remarkable and then say it out loud. I just love the faces and the reactions and the emotions when people have to dig deep and be able to stand up and have strong self-esteem and say it out loud. It's so powerful. But Claire, we're going to go back to you right now, and we're going to go back to that issue of age. But you've done a bit of research in Hays as well, looking at what older workers actually want right now. And I'd love if you could share some of those key findings.
Oh, we surveyed about 9,000 individuals. So from a marketing perspective, it was a good size and a very wide demographic of individuals and companies. And as it stands, we asked a few questions, some very pertinent questions. So out of the survey, we wanted to know, are companies actively thinking about age? Are they actively recruiting? And as it stands, 55% of employers said they're actively hiring people over the age of 50. So in itself, that could be quite positive. But for me, that means that 45% of the businesses aren't. And I think that's where we need to probably spend more of our time considering. We asked many questions, what really matters to the old workforce? And a lot of things do. But one of the things that stood out was about 65%, nearly two-thirds, said that what they really value in the workplace is flexibility. Now, over the last 4 or 5 years, obviously, there's been a huge movement towards more hybrid working. And more flexible approaches to that. But what older workers are saying is it's the genuine flexibility. So it's not necessarily the need, can I work at home 3 days a week? It's can I work 4 days a week, which again is a huge conversation that's happening across the world at the moment about the four-day working week. Can I have flexible hours, genuinely flexible? And I've talked to lots of individuals about what they mean about that. And I'm happy being open myself about it. You know, I'm 60. My mother-in-law is 87. My mother is 87. In the last 5 days, between the two of them, there were 8 or 9 hospital appointments. And they were 3.5 hours apart. So I understand now more and more when people say I need flexibility, I will do my role. But so it's not the hybrid piece. It's the understanding the flexibility. Can you be more flexible with my hours? And I think that's a very hard conversation to have when you get into your 50s, but definitely when you get into your 60s, because people are nervous of saying I'd like flexibility. There's that fear, Sarah, that everyone thinks, oh, they don't want to work very hard anymore. They want to semi-retire. They're trying to do less. And I think that's one of the hardest places to be. So the first workers want question is, how can employers offer genuine flexibility for a genuine reason? And please don't misunderstand me. People in their 60s are not the only people who are caring. A huge amount of the population that we surveyed are carers. But it just happens to be, as you get older, as an individual in the workforce, you're still wanting to work, you have limited time and resource to maybe support those externally. And that was just one conversation that came up. What's super interesting too is being able to communicate to your older workforce. The other point that came up around that was talking about retirement. You know, many, many organisations don't have the conversation with the individual worker about retirement. They might have a retirement plan. They might be offering a pension scheme. But actually having that conversation, Lisa, face-to-face, saying, listen, this is you're of an age, you've been with the business a long time, what's your thoughts? And I have to be very honest here and say, frankly, I've been with Hays 39 years. If someone came down to me and said, we'd like to talk about your retirement plan, it would make me nervous. I'd go, whoa, really? What are you trying to say to me? Because it's not an open conversation that many organizations have. So those were two of the standout comments and challenges, I think, for me when I looked at the data.
Yeah, and we just can't ignore the fact that we're all living longer. The pension age has been moved. Will there be pensions further down the line? Cost of living. We just don't have the same disposable income. But I suppose it is that freedom. You talked about flexibility, but people need a little bit of freedom. Mm-hmm. They don't just want to be the gerbil in the wheel anymore, because that was leading to the great resignations or the walkouts or the burnouts as well. But Lisa, would you say that's the same as younger people as well? Do they want freedom and flexibility too?
Yes, I can imagine that this is a global trend and a trend that's happening across ages. And I think COVID might have been the accelerator of that. People, like Claire mentioned, people don't want to go to work 5 days a week. They want to be responsible, or they want to have ownership about the hours in the day that they work, and they want to be flexible. So I think that the standards of work for employees are higher, I guess, than a few years ago.
Yeah, well, definitely the world of work is changing. So, okay, it's presenting challenges and opportunities then, Claire, for both employers and employees. But do you think, obviously, your stats there, about 55% are actively hiring the over 50s, if you like. But, you know, what more could they be doing? What do they need to look at in their recruitment process? How do they attract, you know, whether it's returners to the workplace as well, not just encouraging people to stay on, but come back?
From the research, what workers, the older workers want to see, and this is quite interesting, you talk about Google's recruiting on competencies, if you've got what we need, you're welcome, is to see. If you go onto many, many websites, there's very little on what organisations do for the older worker. I think one of the things is talk about it, is talk to the population. What do they need? And consider, for example, when it comes to technology, the adage that you know, people who are getting older aren't very good with tech. That's all about the investment. That's all about being in an environment where the business as a whole invests in the older worker just as much as they would with anyone else when the tech comes into a business, or when we're using technology outside of work. So I think there are some stereotypical conversations, aren't there, that need to be busted, I suppose. You know, just because you're older doesn't mean you don't look at TikTok. It doesn't mean you can't use technology. It doesn't mean you don't understand the impact of AI. And I think from the survey, you know, when I was looking at the data, you know, close to 49% of older workers who responded said they felt their chance of job offer had been impacted because of their age, which is a clear indication that ageism continues to affect older workers. So there's that sort of slight, not deep-rooted, sounds a bit dramatic, but that stereotype, that bias still that people feel when they get to an age, they're not required anymore. And it's difficult to dig into, but it's very important that organisations somehow make it obvious that they are a welcoming organisation, value that experience you carry with you.
So then, ageism, you've mentioned that word, and you feel that ageism is affecting a worker's chances at being recruited, perhaps. But how do you call that out? Do we need to get to the point where, you know, companies need to be thinking, are we being ageist here? Are we challenging our biases? Are we really aware? Could that stand up in a tribunal, for example, an employment tribunal, as being ageist?
Well, I think there's a distinction, isn't there, between ageism and age discrimination. The basic premise was that ageism is what we feel. You know, it's that slightly unconscious bias. Whereas age discrimination is what you see and what you choose to do about that. And so where I think employers need to respond is, well, we did a poll on LinkedIn. 53% of people believe there's a stigma around over 50s returning to work today. So to your points there about those returning to the work as well. So employers need to think about what they can do to overcome this, you know, put plans in place to educate their workforce of the value of older workers, to counteract any negative perceptions. And I think that's that word again, that value. How do we ensure that everyone in our workforce feels valued, but for the purposes of this conversation, those particularly in the older age group? And I think that probably is at the heart, isn't it, of the culture of a business, And again, that DE&I lens that we all try and look through, what can we do to improve that? So it's improving the value, proving and improving the perception of what the older generation can add to the marketplace and the workplace and your particular organisation.
Great points. And Lisa, we'll go back to your I Am Remarkable movement.
So this is an initiative that was launched 8 years ago by someone who worked at Google. And I'm Remarkable empowers underrepresented groups to speak openly about their accomplishments. An underrepresented group can be anyone who feels that they're not part of the majority of the group at that point in time. So the elderly workforce can be also so definitely an underrepresented group. And in essence, the I Am Remarkable workshop is a 90-minute workshop that emphasizes the importance of self-promotion. We give attendees the tools to develop this self-promotion skill. So we typically ask surveys at the end of the workshop and 3 months after. And there we see that 50% of the participants experience career growth and 80% of them feel more confident and 90% is even more active in self-promotion. And the participants attribute this to the workshop. It started as a Google initiative and it started as a women-only initiative, but early on, we noticed that not just women have difficulties in engaging in self-promotion, but typically everyone that at any point in time can be part of an underrepresented group typically feels that they struggle with sharing their accomplishments. So it's open to everyone, not just people at Google. If you search on Google, I'm Remarkable, you will get to the right website and you can basically assign to different workshops that we host on a daily or weekly basis. We are present in more than 180 countries. And until today, we've reached more than 500,000 participants. So I've hosted myself workshop in EMEA, in the US and in South Africa. But similar to me, there are more than 3,000 facilitators who are hosting these sessions on a frequent basis.
It is so brilliant. And we've seen with the stats that you've just shared with us, the impact that it's actually having. Because oftentimes people might feel imposter syndrome, problems with confidence. Maybe they've taken time out of the workplace. Maybe they've never seen themselves in upskilling. So it gives them that. There's a lovely line in that video about that chiropractic adjustment when they check in with just what they are able to do and all of their strengths. Instead of being, we're hardwired to always look for the negatives. Oh, but I can't do that and I can't do this and I can't do the other. But not realizing some of the transferable skills or the strengths or the amazing things that they've achieved so far.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that the challenge that I often hear is I don't want to share my accomplishments because it might come across as bragging.
Yeah.
But it's not bragging if it's based on facts. So we all love listening to TED Talks. And why do we love listening to them? Simply it's because they share some sort of accomplishment and it inspires and motivates others. And for us, it's no different when we share our own accomplishments. It can inspire our colleagues or everyone around us, maybe on a smaller scale than a TED Talk, but still. And it's also so important because accomplishments don't speak for themselves. So we can't just assume what others do or do not know about us. You can't assume that your manager or your director or someone else in the organization knows what you've achieved if you don't openly talk about it.
And if we've never sat and thought about it or openly communicated it and not felt like we were bragging, but that we were just showing our capabilities and our potential, you know, we're never going to get that job or we're never even going to put ourselves forward. Do you think more people are driven to apply for promotions and jobs because of attending an I Am Remarkable workshop?
Yeah, definitely. So 90% of the people who've attended the workshop says that they are more active in self-promotion. They feel more confident and more than 50% experience career growth, which could include a promotion after 3 months after they participated in the workshop. During this workshop, we also give tips and tricks that can help you with engaging in self-promotion. So, for example, we would say track your accomplishments, write them down so that you have them ready when needed, when you're applying for that new role, for example. Or you can also host Remarkable Wednesdays with a group of friends or a group of colleagues to share an achievement out loud. It's important that it's shared out loud. It's not just written down. Or you can also practice expressing your accomplishments with your manager in one-on-one conversations. So those are just a few of the tips and tricks that we share in those workshops.
And are they always career focused? So when we talk about accomplishments, are we always saying, you know, I've achieved X, Y, Z in my career? Because that's where people struggle, because if they've been caring or, you know, doing whatever, maybe they feel like they didn't get the opportunities on the career ladder, or they've come from backgrounds where they didn't get the same opportunities as others.
So some people would only talk about their personal lives, and some people would only talk about their professional lives. It depends where their headspace is at that point in time. So it's not just about your professional life. It's about sharing your accomplishments within your personal and professional life.
And Claire, is that important too, whenever you're going for a job interview or for a promotion? You know, how much of the personal do you bring into something that's very career focused, an interview?
Yes, I think it is important. We need to nurture a world where people can bring their whole self to work. At an interview stage, yes, I do think it's important. I think it's important to show the whole of you.
So if you were able to go to a job interview, Claire, and be able to say, I have my mother-in-law and my mother, they're both of an older age, I have caring responsibilities, but if you could say that confidently, and it's important to me to be able to deliver that care rather than being something, oh no, I'll not, if they find that out, they'll not give me that job.
Absolutely. And again, it goes back to what can employers do to attract the old workers or to retain, because retention is a huge challenge for all businesses, isn't it? To retain the older worker would be allow those conversations to take place. It's like, you know, one of the key things, as I said, about the retirement is that actually people of an age want to talk about retirement plans, not retiring tomorrow. They want to talk about the retirement plans. Only 11% of employers have discussed retirement plans with workers. And those workers plan to retire in 5 years. So we're not having the conversation, and yet we're going to lose a huge portion of our workforce within 5 years.
What if somebody comes back then and says to HR, to their boss, I have no plans to retire. I'm just going to keep going till I keel over. At what point do you say, I choose now to go or not?
I would be delighted if you know, everyone I've worked with wanted to work. Because we have this image. I mean, retirement was a false date set, wasn't it? Many, many years ago, due to the state of the workforce at that particular time that it was set. So it's become a thing we talk about, has it? This number, this retiring at 60 or 65, what we now say is 67 here, aren't we? It's become a number that we're all aiming for. And I think that's a conversation in itself. There should be no number, really. But of course, if it's driven by financial needs, and state pensions, et cetera, then of course it flips it to a conversation that there is a need because I need to know how to provide. Hence those conversations that only 11% of employers are having.
Lisa, you've worked with teams around the world with the I Am Remarkable initiative from New York to the Netherlands. Do you see the same trends in underrepresented groups across the world?
Yeah, it's interesting to see that the same trends occur across the world. So oftentimes underrepresented groups don't engage in self-promotion because their cultural or familial expectations around self-advocacy are different from what is expected at work. And also if the language of your workspace is not your first or not even your second language that you speak, not only do you have minority-related concerns about self-promotion, but you also have language concerns and barriers to feel articulate. And when this is the case, we often call out that allyship is needed. Everyone can be an ally or an advocate by giving voice and volume to those who are less well-represented. In the I'm Remarkable workshop, we allocate some time to this. You could be an ally by, for example, attributing ideas correctly, by stating who shared the idea or inviting that person to share more when the person is not engaged or not really happy to self-promote. You can also acknowledge accomplishments publicly or privately, depending on the individual's preference. Or you can ask probing questions if you notice that someone is using we instead of I when this person is discussing accomplishments. So there are, again, like a few tips and tricks that we would share in this workshop that hopefully help.
All very important in the recruitment process, I would say, as well.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think allyship is phenomenally important. I'm an ally for our Pride Network. For us, that's about sharing either personal experiences or being open to allowing people to share their personal experiences regardless of seniority. Because I think also that can be a challenge. You know, you can be perceived to be, because you've been around a long time, and you've got a title, not to be approachable. And so I think part of the being an ally for our Pride Network, for example, is about ensuring that you are approachable and that you talk their language, that you also talk about their language, and you take the time to learn how people choose to portray themselves, or choose to be to refer to, or choose to talk about themselves. And I think it's an investment. It's been a huge investment personally for me, and I'd love to have a minute of it to really understand and be able to fully embrace this fantastic diverse workforce that we have, and ensure that they feel valued for who they are and what they do and the way that they do it.
Yeah, and look, who's not at the table, and why are they not at the table?
Yes.
How do we understand why they're not at the table? But yes, that's maybe for a whole other podcast. Lisa, you mentioned at the start that you have a remit to advance the digital transformation of the food sector through Google Media and tech. So do you see tech as being an advantage or a disadvantage to certain groups?
Yeah, we said it in the beginning of the podcast that one might assume that the older workforce might not get up to speed with new technologies as fast as the younger workforce. But we also mentioned these are stereotypes and biases that should be addressed. And in my opinion, this is it's more of a mindset thing than an age thing. And I believe that tech has advantages for everyone. So the rise of artificial intelligence enables us to be more efficient at work. Generative AI chatbots like Bard and ChatGPT, they can help you to develop code or get inspiration for a business plan, or can help you navigate your career path. So they can serve as your personal assistant. And in Google, we have several people considered the older workforce with the age of 50 plus who are tech gurus, who are up to speed and up to date with AI. And AI can make your life easier. I believe that AI will likely be integrated into the workforce more gradually than commonly assumed. But if you have a continuous learning mindset, you will be fine. So again, I believe it's more of a topic of having the correct mindset versus the correct age. And in the end, as a marketeer, you are not competing with tech, you're competing with other marketeers who are using tech.
At this point in the podcast, I'd love to know, would you like to ask a question of each other? So I wonder, Lisa, would you like to ask a question of Claire?
Definitely. So we've been mainly addressing age from an older workforce point of view, and I like to turn it around. So, Claire, are you aware of any biases related to the younger generation? Imagine that someone in their early 30s with not that many years of experience is applying for an executive position. Are there specific measures in place to challenge preconceptions and ensure a fair treatment for the applicants of all ages?
What I can say is that for us over here, Equality Act covered all challenges around equality, not just the older worker. And I think the recruitment process is certainly, I've witnessed over the last 39 years, have completely changed. So that actually the way that you go to market, the way you talk about an opportunity or a job, career opportunity for somebody, it has to be worded in such a way that anybody could apply that feels they are right. So you don't advertise on years of experience now. We have most companies will have what we call blind CVs, no age, and even the qualifications come off most CVs. So, because again, unconscious bias, you can age people by, oh, so she studied in 1977 or she went to university in 82, so she must be about. So all of that has been eradicated to open up, particularly, I think, to focus on not just the older, but the younger. And it's that lifelong learning piece that is really important for individual to take responsibility for, and whatever age you're at, to ensure that you're upskilling and you're tooling yourself with the best kit you can to be relevant. And I think that's not just an age thing, it's to be relevant. But yeah, it's changed a lot, Lisa.
That's great to hear.
Now, what about you, Claire? Do you have a question for Lisa?
Yes, I genuinely am fascinated about how, and this isn't necessarily age related, but I am a 6-year woman, how women today who are not of my age, because again, we don't use the word younger in recruitment anymore, but not of my age, how do you see your future, Lisa? Do you ever consider age as a challenge for you? I'm not talking about female or male, really. Does it ever happen that you think they might think I'm too young, they might think I'm not experienced because I'm only 30? That would fascinate me, because I've been very much focused, obviously, on the research and the older worker.
Thanks for the question. And for me personally, I've actually been struggling with this. So I've just completed an executive course on leadership at London Business School. And here at London Business School, we spoke a lot about challenges that leaders often face, which is we have this one sentence that came back often, and the sentence is, "What got you here won't bring you there." It's also a book by Marshall Goldsmith, who is an executive coach, and the book explores the common habits and the behaviors that successful people may exhibit, which ironically can hinder their future success. And Goldsmith provides insights into how individuals can overcome these challenges and continue to grow and advance in their career. And I'm at the stage in my career where the book that I just recommended definitely makes sense. So I'm committed to learn more about how to operate best at the next level and learn about coaching, giving and receiving feedback, and enabling teams. Because I don't tick the box yet of managing a team of 50 people. That's very difficult in Google. There are not that many managers who manage teams of 50 people. So how do I make sure that I possess those competences and skills in another way?
That's fascinating. Okay. If you could encourage our listeners to read one piece of research or one report that has inspired you to be more responsible, what would it be? Claire?
It's a brilliant book, and it's called 100 Year Life, and it's written by two fantastic economists, one called Linda Grattan and the other called Andrew Scott. And basically it's on the premise that, you know, does the thought of working to 60 or 70 fill you with dread? What Linda says is, if you now work until your 70s or 80s in a rapidly changing job market, then maintaining productivity is no longer about brushing up on knowledge. It's about setting time aside to make fundamental investments in relearning and reskilling. And it's just a really super interesting book based on the economics of life and the world, and how we can take individual responsibility to do exactly what you're talking about, Lisa, which is that lifelong learning, but look at it through the lens of, you know, of 100 years. And I find it absolutely fascinating. And it makes me think time and time again, am I investing in my people, in something, my business? Am I investing in myself?
So what's the next career for you then, Claire? I wonder. I mean, you've already spent so long with Hayes. What will you be doing next, I wonder?
What will I be doing next? I'd like to do with Hayes and externally, maybe I'd like to do a lot more mentoring, particularly for the underrepresented community. It matters to me very much. And I think your life can literally be transformed if someone just takes the time to really understand who you are and enables you to bring that to work 100%. And it won't always be 100%. But if you can do that for individuals, it transforms their life, and in turn transforms the life of those around them, and in turn creates that place where we would all want to be. And I accept that that's a big thing, and I'm not going to achieve it overnight, but that's my focus.
Well, I think Lisa is doing exactly the same thing with her I Am Remarkable movement and initiative. Do you just love doing that and working in that sphere, Lisa?
100%. And you can both become facilitators.
Okay, final question for each of you. And this is one we ask every podcast guest. As responsible leaders, what are you personally committed to doing more of or less of, or both, in the coming year? Claire?
More of opening up the space that individuals might want to move into, that they might think eludes them. So saying to everybody, you can do what you want, you could be who you want to be. What is it that I need to do to support you in getting there? And less talking too quickly, because I've been doing it for 60 years and I'm still doing it.
Lisa, same question to you, more of or less of in the coming year?
More of, I think, following this book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. How do I put this into practice? And next to that, I also want to put things into perspective more. So I'm a marketeer. I'm not a heart surgeon. How do you also put your job into perspective there?
Fabulous. Okay, well, great recommendations. I've been scribbling away, so I'm sure our listeners have too. Thank you so much to Claire Kemsley and to Lisa DeWatcher for joining us on this fascinating podcast about age and underrepresentation in the workforce and what we all can do, whether we're employers or we're colleagues, to both empower ourselves, but also to nurture others. Thank you so much for being with us today, for tuning in. Thank you to our great guests. You've been listening to The Lens with me, Sarah Travers. And if your business would like help with employability challenges or specifically access support around age in the workplace, then you know where to go. Please visit www.bitc.org.uk. Lots of help and support there. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you again next time.